Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
This is Sharon Vornholt, the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, here today for another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. I'm excited about the podcast today. My guests today are Nasser Ellerebi, I might have botched that totally, from Charlotte, North Carolina, and Chris Sater from Billings, Montana. These two guys live in different parts of the country, but they've started a podcast together, which they've just launched, and they're doing some JV deals together. So I thought it would be fun to have them both on the show today and mix up things a little bit and talk about how they work together. Now, Nasser calls himself a corporate failure, although I don't see how that's possible, but he started investing in 2007, and he's managed to create multiple streams of income for himself. Chris is a real estate investor based out of Billings, Montana, who wholesales, rehabs, and is building a real estate portfolio of rentals. In 2014, Chris completed 15 rehab projects, wholesaled around 20 houses, and purchased several rentals. Welcome to the show, guys.
Glad
you're
having us.
Well, I'll tell you what, you all got pretty impressive background. So let's start off by having each one of you tell everyone a little bit about yourself and how long you've been investing. So, Chris, you want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. Well, thank you for that introduction. My name is Christopher Cedar out of Billings, Montana. I've been in the real estate investing business since 2009. I kind of have grown up around it my entire life. My father's been a full-time rehabber, landlord, and also a real estate broker since the early 1980s. So I've always grown up around helping him paint some of the rentals, mow all the lawns, and that stuff. I graduated college in 2009 and kind of decided that real estate investing was the path that I wanted to go into. I was looking at other jobs and in banking and in insurance, finance, whatnot, and everything around that time was paying, $28,000 a year, somewhere around there. So after speaking with my father and kind of evaluating things, real estate was definitely the right path, and I then went on a journey of learning everything I possibly could about every little aspect of real estate investing to find where I kind of wanted to fit in. And at first I kind of really focused on the rehabbing aspect. That's absolutely what I found that I was passionate about, buying these ugly distressed properties, fixing them up, making them pretty. So that's where kind of I had started doing a couple rehab projects. And over time I kind of got more into wholesaling, and also just over the years I knew that rentals were going to be my long-term wealth strategy, so we just started kind of slowly acquiring some rentals for myself and for my business, and that's really where the journey began, I would say, and what it's evolved into us doing multiple rehab projects a year in our own local market. And because we're in small town Billings, Montana, where the city population is about 110,000, the county is 160,000. We are really limited on the amount of deals that we can do. So I think it was 2012 I decided to first dabble in the virtual wholesaling world, tried that out, failed my first couple times. Then in 2013, tried it again and started having more and more success. And then 2014 had a lot more success virtual wholesaling, and that's where it's kind of brought me today, where we're focusing in our local market mainly on rehabbing houses and virtual doing, two or three up to five virtual deals a month right now in markets all across the United States. So that's just kind of a quick little background on me.
Well, that's really interesting. So what about you, Nassar?
Well, basically, I flipped my first house in 2007 while I was in undergrad. Found out about real estate when I was 19, and around 24, I bought my first house, and I was definitely inspired by the show with that house. They made it look so easy, and me and my friend came up with an idea. Hey, look, let's buy a beat-up house. All we have to do is buy a ugly house, renovate it, and get us a contractor to make a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my introduction into real estate, and long story short, we ended up losing like $7,000 apiece on that deal. So that pretty much sucked. From there, I moved down. I had my master's degree. Moved down to Charlotte, North Carolina. This deal happened back in Jersey. Moved down to Charlotte, North Carolina, and joined the workforce. And if you know anything about Charlotte is the second biggest banking industry behind New York City.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, it's the second biggest bank industry behind New York City. And so with that being said, went into banking in 2008. 2008, I bought a rental the traditional way because I still was interested in real estate. I just figured my deals under wrong. 2009, bought another rental, this particular rental, which I wouldn't have bought, but, you know, you make mistakes along the way. And in 2009, I discovered a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad that made me wake up and realize I missed the step in real estate investing, and that's learned about real estate. And 2010, I joined the REIT and everything else, I think 2009, 2010, and that's what I learned about creating real estate and wholesaling. And I fired from my corporate job in 2012, and from there, I've been doing real estate full-time ever since.
Okay, so 2012, you left your corporate job.
That is correct.
Okay. You know, it's really funny what education will do for us, isn't it? Once we actually, you know, learn. But, you know, your story about losing money, it's really not all that uncommon. You know, people tend to be, I think entrepreneurs tend to be people that dive in head first. And I think you said you skipped a step. And actually, that's not all that common. You know, we know it's important now, but there are still a lot of people out there that do skip that step. They just go out and buy something and then encounter a lot of problems. So tell me, how did you all start working together?
Very interesting. Me and Chrissy, we was both on a site called Match.com. I don't know if you've heard of it.
What was it again? I'm sorry?
Match.com.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm sure there's a story here. Can't wait to hear this one.
I'm just joking. Me and Chris actually met on Facebook and in a real estate forum. And I started following his stuff in 2010 and one day, you know, Chris reached out to me. I want to say about, I don't know if I was 2 years ago or so now, but he reached out to me and said, hey, look, I'm going to be doing some virtual stuff in Charlotte. Would you like to be my boots on the ground? And I said, absolutely. And ever since then, we've been doing some JV deals together in Charlotte. We just started a podcast, the Flipping Empire podcast on iTunes. Together, and we will be coming dropping a coaching program this year as well. So, but we first met up on Facebook in a real estate forum. In this particular real estate group, where there's a lot of content.
Uh-huh.
That's how we met.
Interesting. So you now, if I understand correctly, you're both doing rehabs, both doing wholesaling, both doing rentals. Is that correct?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. So you all have very similar business models. So that would lend itself well to working together since you work in the same things. But now, so who finds the deals? I mean, it's obvious who looks at the deals in Charlotte. So who finds the deals?
Chris does the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll do a marketing campaign, and I work with a few people like this, but he does a marketing campaign here, and I'll screen the sellers and go out, set appointments, look at it, make offers, do that whole thing.
And very interesting. So how long did it take each of you to get your first deal? So people are always interested to find that out.
I got a mentor in January of 2011. Learned about, I took out 2010 to study about wholesaling and creative real estate. And when I say creative real estate, I learned about pretty much all, like a lot of aspects of it. So I was so fascinated, so I just dived into it 100% while I worked in my job. But when I got off my job, it was time for education and my weekend, of course. 2011, I got a mentor. And I want to say January, it took me 8 months to get my first deal. In November, I was closing my first deal.
Okay. What about you, Chris?
For me, I guess it's a little different. In 2009, my very first official deal, I had partnered with my father before I actually started my business. And that was the first one that just kind of he already pretty much had bought. When I started my business, the first official deal from then, it probably took me, I want to say, about 5 or 6 months before I actually found the deal and was able to flip it. But, yeah, it definitely, one of the big things in the beginning for me was figuring out how to actually find deals was the biggest thing. I had no idea. And my father, most of his deals that he did prior to me coming on board was all referrals, was all bank-owned property, some foreclosure auctions, and things like that. So it really did take me some time to figure out what exactly or where the deals were in my market.
Well, and you were probably, you said, let's see, 2009, that was right about the time, if your dad was a realtor, they were pretty plentiful on the MLS. We were talking about that a little bit earlier before we actually started the call. There were deals on the MLS that, you know, were really nice houses being sold as investment properties, whereas today it's kind of flip-flopped. You can sell anything on the MLS. You know, so it's made the whole business, the way you have to get the deals, different. At least that's the way I think it is. What do you think?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And, you know, back then, like our area, we didn't get as affected with the market crash as the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Our inventory was very high on the MLS back then. And, yeah, that's where for a few years, 95% of our deals came from was just I'd go and I'd make 20, 30 offers on MLS deals and get a couple rehab projects.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was definitely – that was pretty much all we were doing back then was just making a bunch of offers and picking up a couple deals.
Yeah, those were the good old days as far as investors finding deals goes. Now, so you were the one that had to learn how to do marketing. So I'll start with you since I've got you here. What were the first types of marketing you did, and what do you do today to find deals?
Yeah, absolutely. Back, I guess, way back when, I think I tried out every different form of marketing for our business. I'm trying to think what I actually – my first marketing was in a little local kind of paper, the Thrifty
mm-hmm.
Nickel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was my first. We did a little front page ad, and that actually worked back then. It actually only worked one time, I should say. We ran an ad for about a year, Within the first 2 weeks that we ran it, we did get a rehab project from it. From there, we didn't really get anything else, but that was my first type of marketing. I think it was right around the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, that our market really did change, where our MLS inventory almost dropped in half. There just wasn't anything on the market. So I really started focusing on yellow letters to vacant houses. That was kind of almost became my niche, and that was worked out really well for quite a while. Since then, I've more so expanded into doing more postcards just because the cost of postcards, and they, for us, with yellow letters, we were getting a higher response rate, but the deal close ratio was about the same as postcards.
Mm-hmm.
So we switched to postcards and started doing a couple thousand a month here locally with just postcards. And that's kind of what we've continued to do. We've switched it up to doing a little more targeted mailing campaign depending on the niche we're going after. For example, if we're going after a little higher end than our normal, we found that postcards aren't as effective in those areas. So we've been switching it up and doing more professional looking letters, and also giving these people a little more information kind of about us and about how working with us can go, because it seems like with higher end properties, these people are a little more educated. They're more so, they want as much information about you, about the process, and so that they can weigh their pros and cons. So we found that by giving them as much information as possible is the best way to go in that aspect. But yeah, for most of our mailings, we're still doing postcards.
Okay. So what about you, Nasser?
I started off farming neighborhoods in 2011. Learned about Korean real estate in 2010, even though, I did my first deal in 2007. I learned about Korean real estate in 2010, the wholesale and all that. But my mentor, what he had me doing was going out and farming neighborhoods. Then I would cross-reference the address to see who owned it, see if it was bank-owned. And Sharon, as you would know, at that time, 2008 to 2012, a lot of vacant houses were bank-owned, and those were plentiful. So I would not mail those, but I would mail the people who owned the house, and that were just ugly, beat up, tall grass, boarded up, so on and so on. And I would just send them out a handwritten postcard. I used to get, back in 2011, a pre-stamped postcard was $32 for 100 of them. You can get them on the post office. The price, because a postcard stamp was 29 cents then, and 100 pre-stamped postcards was $32. I don't know the price now, but I know it's 100 and not past about $42. So, $40. So, for 100, because of the problem was that then a lot of post offices did not keep in pre-stamped postcards in there. So I would have to get 10 from here, 20 from there, 30 from there, because, I mean, it's 2011, who was using postcards then? So,
right.
Right, yeah, so with that being said, I was, that's how I went right out. I went to buy the house at 115 Main Street, sincerely, Nasser, please call, so on and so on. Same message that was on the yellow letter to be on the postcard. So I started out doing that. You fast forward, I'm still doing direct mail. That's my primary source for marketing. But, I'm still doing direct mail.
Okay. So what about marketing on the web? Do you have a website for lead generation?
I do have a website. Okay. Now I do have a website, two websites actually. However, with a lot of people don't, and I use Bandit Signs to get deals too. Mm-hmm. Now, 100 signs would probably give me about one deal a month. Now, with the banner sign, I mean, with the website, a lot of people don't realize a website are similar to a business card. So if you have a business card and that business card is in your pocket, it means nothing. So similar to a website, to actually get it working like it's supposed to work, you either got to do search engine optimization to get it in front of people or run an AdWords campaign. AdWords campaign is pretty tricky. I've done it in the past. Well, my plan is the near future this year is to probably learn about it myself and start running it myself. I do get some leads now organically. However, when I get the leads, they're not exclusive. They just Google the We Buy Houses company, and they just fill out the first five or six people website, just fill it in and just wait to there. But I do have a website, but it's not, as far as converting it, it's not something to brag or talk about at this point for me.
Yeah, what about you, Chris? What about your web presence?
We definitely have several websites, and I think I probably have, I don't know, 50 or so, all from different keywords, different niches. And we've kind of found in our local market, we get maybe a couple leads a month from organic search, where a lot of my websites are at the top of a lot of common search terms, like We Buy Houses, Billings, or Sell House Fast, Billings, you know, some of the higher ones, but we just don't have the amount of search traffic here to make those effective. I put one of my websites for selling on every postcard, every letter that I send out, because we found that a lot of people, they want to do a little research on you, or, you know, check you out before they give you a call. And I think it works. Like, for example, just a couple months ago, we had one mailing campaign that I sent out about 1,200 postcards. I only got – it was a terrible mailing campaign. I only got two phone calls, and I got one website opt-in. And that website opt-in was a house that we ended up wholesaling for a nice $9,000 profit. But that lady did not want to – talk on the phone, and most of our conversation with her was via email, and it was because she, I think, had maybe a stroke in the past or something along those lines, where she was embarrassed by her speech, which is totally acceptable. So yeah, but for organic searches and those, we really don't get a ton of leads from them every month. Just, we always put our websites in all of our marketing that we do to generate traffic, and still trying to figure out how to market the best on Facebook and all that fun stuff, which is, it's a never ending journey.
Well, it is, and it's a process, and there are some, I think there are some better products out there for lead generation than others. But I tell you what, you all are younger than I am, obviously, but what I have found through interviewing different people is that the younger generation is much more likely to look online than to ever look at a mail piece. You know, I had a girl tell me, I don't understand mail. I never got mail. I don't pay my bills by mail. So I'm not ever going to use mail. That's just her generational thinking is completely different than the people that are responding to my postcards, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you all
have any employees or virtual assistants? Do you all have any help? I mean, I know, Chris, you're in a little bit different situation because your dad had an existing business. So let me get each of you to weigh in on that.
Okay. I do have a virtual assistant that builds my list. My virtual assistant builds my list.
If somebody didn't know what you were talking about, that explain that to them.
As far as build my list, basically what that means is, in my particular 50 up in DeKalb County, I can get certain lists online. So mm-hmm. like Charlotte, I can get code enforcement online, tax list online. If I buy an absentee owner list, she cleans that up, puts it together the way I like it. Same thing when she goes online and grabs information from me. So Excel is something that I cannot do. You know, I mean, if you look at my resume, yeah, I'm going to tell you I can do it. But if you, and that's kind of one reason I got fired from that job. But anyway, Excel, the whole Microsoft Office suite is not really a strong point for me. So as far as I just dedicate all that out to her as far as like putting my sheet together in Excel and doing things like that. If I see a marketing piece that I want, I have her put it in Word for me and, you know, change some things or things like that, and I will get it printed out from there. So those are the type of tasks my virtual assistant does.
Okay. What about you, Chris?
I currently just have an acquisitions manager. He's kind of part-time. He's also a real estate investor. He was actually a guy that I kind of helped get started going, and I brought him on pretty much kind of full-time, part-time to sort all of our leads, call people back, negotiate, go look at properties, make offers, and all that fun stuff. So he's really the only kind of full-time, and he's just paid strictly by the deals that we do. And other than that, no, I don't have any full-time employees. We have, you know, like my dad owns a real estate brokerage, so we have some realtors that do some work for us. We have independent contractors that we hire to do all our rehab projects. But other than that, no, I did for a while have one virtual assistant that did some online posting for me and did sort some mailing lists and different things like that, but I haven't officially had a virtual assistant for probably 8 or 9 months right now.
Okay, so do you do your own administrative work then?
Do most of it, yeah.
Okay.
You know, some of it my father handles he deals with all the rentals and all that work. You know, of course we have accountants and people like that handle mm-hmm. all the other stuff, but yeah, we have a decent little system to handle all of our small administrative work. And I also have like Pat Live that all of my phone calls go to them and they kind of send me a message on what was said. I usually just forward all those calls off to my acquisitions manager, and he talks to everybody.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to see how different people delegate the parts that they keep and the parts that they get rid of. And I think if you don't delegate, you really get stuck. You know, you just really can't grow your business if you don't figure this piece out. Whatever it is you don't want to do, you have to figure out how to get rid of that. So, Nessar, let me ask you this. What have been your biggest challenges along the way?
My biggest challenges along the way is just basically staying consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing you have the experience, and you mm-hmm. can talk about, you know what I mean, every type of transaction, everything that could go right, that could go wrong, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, most people can't. Now, with me, it's just my biggest challenge is staying consistent and getting up and doing it every day. I mean, because me and Chris are both passionate about real estate. We love what we do. However, with me, I mean, there's days that I just give up and quit. But when you think about your why, what I do, and I think about just me walking back into a job, and I just keep going. But, you know, you're just thinking about your why and why you got into it and the freedom and the results that you get, you know, it's just a no-brainer just to keep going. So you know, sometimes with, like, let's say it just get rough. Like, you know, you might have two or three deals. Like, I was looking at a deal where I could have easily cleared $20,000 or $30,000. And, of course, you know, and I've been working on the deal for over a year, and, of course, all these title issues come up. These old mortgages come up. When you've got stuff like that, old mortgages pop up or situations, it's not the easiest to solve. It could take 2 weeks to a month or months to resolve. So, you know, it's just staying consistent and staying dedicated. And I'm at this point now where I want to outsource everything and just grow my business to a more predictable business a month. Right now, I average about 3 deals a month, and you got your ups and downs. Whereas last month, I only closed, I want to say, 1 deal last month. So I still have those months. So what I want to do is just create a more consistent business that I can actually grow and scale.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to aspire to. And I think you said, you know, being consistent, more predictable income, more predictable amount of deals. It takes a lot of the pressure off of you.
Yes.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? What's been some of your biggest challenges?
I would say a couple of our biggest challenges have been managing contractors and making sure that whole process is consistent. We've gone through several contractors, and I don't know what it is, but we always kind of, it always seems to go the same way. We'll work with one contracting crew that's awesome for about a year or so, and then all of a sudden they start to get lazy. Maybe we take our kind of eye off the ball. We think, hey, man, they're going to do good work. They know the process. They know what we expect. But it always seems like at some point they start getting lazy. Their work quality starts to decline. And then we end up firing them, finding a new contracting crew to work with that does awesome. So that's kind of been a challenge. And just making sure that everything is running smoothly with the rehab process, from making sure material is on site and all that has kind of been probably our biggest challenge over the years. You know, it's just always kind of up and down there. But other than that, I would say, like Nasser said, was consistency too. I think with any business, we've struggled too in the past with consistency with marketing, making sure it's out every month, making sure you're tracking everything, making sure you're kind of just knowing exactly what's working. But I also think with real estate, especially right now, we always just need to be evolving in our business and in what we're doing and what we're focusing on. I know that we seem to evolve year by year in what we're doing with direct mail, what we're doing with our business, where we're kind of taking it. Like last year we did a ton of rehab projects. This year we're not going to do as many rehab projects, but we've bought several rentals that we're in the process of fixing up and focusing on some other aspects. I found that doing that many rehab projects for me, just I was spending a lot of time managing contractors, managing projects, and it just wasn't what I wanted to be doing. So I'd say we're definitely always evolving.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, somebody asked me recently when I felt like I was over the hump, and I said, actually, I don't know that you ever feel like you're over the hump, because your hump changes. Like you said, you keep evolving and you keep growing, and you get over one hump, and then you've got a different hump. So is that the way you all feel?
Absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I thought that I used to think that a dollar amount was an arrival point, that I had finally arrived. But, like, when you're, like, wholesaling or rehabbing, like, you're living a deal-to-deal lifestyle. You're only as good as your last deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to keep going. And there's actually really no arrival point. It just, like you said, it just gets bigger, like more obstacles, and you just get a big, okay, so I want this now, I want that now. So, yeah, you really don't feel like you arrived, because I know I don't. And here, and I'm considered in my market the big fish, the little pond, the guy who successful or old son, things like that, and I really don't feel like it, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Chris?
I definitely agree. I feel like there was a point in time where more so everything started to maybe click together, where
mm-hmm.
it really kind of, it got a lot easier to find deals, to, you know, sell deals, to know what people wanted, to know just, I guess, all the different pieces and putting them together. But at the same time, I think there's always something else that we're learning, and yeah, I don't know if you ever really get over the hump until you're doing tens of millions a year, but then I think there's a whole another set of challenges that come along with that too.
I think then you would just want to run away. I actually know somebody that built this big business, and then when they got there, it's like, is this really what I want to do? I don't have a life. So they started like getting rid of pieces of it, like their management company and different things. You know, you can build something and think you know what you want to build, and then when you get it, you go, what have I done?
Yeah.
Yeah. So do you have something that you feel like is the thing that has made you more successful today? Is there one thing or several things?
To be honest with you, the one thing I feel that has made me successful today is just, like, I didn't do anything genius. You know, I started out broke, wholesaling, and Chris kind of inspired me to get into holding rentals as well, creating multiple streams of income in real estate. But it's with me, the genius thing I did is I just didn't give up. I just kept going and
mm-hmm.
kept going throughout all the hard times. I haven't just kept going.
Well, there's a lot to that. I mean, when you I think that's what separates, ultimately, I think that is the thing that separates people from the ones who don't succeed, is they just refuse to give up no matter how hard it gets. They just keep on going. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think one of the things that I've noticed, even locally in my own market, that's kind of separated me and even my father from the average real estate investor here, is our mindset that deals are everywhere. I've
mm-hmm.
noticed that so many people, even way back when in 2009, had such a scarcity mindset where, oh, you know, there just aren't deals right now. Oh, the realtor told me that the market's too competitive. Oh, there's always some sort of an excuse, whereas and I've learned this from my father. He's always taught me, you know, what you focus on and what you really visualize in your mind is what's going to appear, what you're going to find. And I found that so much with real estate investing, where if we really need a deal, if we really say we're just finishing a couple rehab projects, oh my God, we need another rehab project. If I just focus on that and put it out there kind of to the world that I need a deal, we always find one or find multiple deals. So it's kind of, I think the mindset is the biggest thing. Not having that scarcity mindset that it's so hard to find deals, that
mm-hmm.
deals just aren't out there, is what has separated me from some of the others.
Yeah. I think, you know, and what you both said, you know, I think it's, it all goes back to just staying in the game and change. You got to change. You do have to change your mindset. And you just have to find deals differently in different markets, or, you know, in different economies or different sets of circumstances. The deals are there, but you might have to change the way you do things a bit.
Yeah, I would totally agree.
So you all are both successful investors, both doing a lot of the same things, but you've definitely got some different things going on. So if you were to give somebody some advice just starting out, that what would you tell them they need to do to be successful, other than just staying in the game, which is a given?
First, properly educate yourself. Focus, most importantly, focus on one niche. And, I mean, just with what Chris said, you got people, your mindset is everything. Mindset is everything. Like, I wake up, even though it's more competitive now, absolutely, I wake up and say, hey, look, I'm going to get a piece of a pie, and I've been able to get deals every month. Now, you have people who didn't start when I started, 2010, 2011, deals were plentiful. And for whatever reason, whatever excuse that they had, now they're saying, oh, I can't start now, so it's competitive. They always have an excuse no matter what the market cycle is. And you have to fix your mentality first and focus on what you want and go after it. So, for example, if you know you want to do wholesale, you just study wholesale. If you get an email for a course for short sales, don't go after that, because that's not aligned with what you want to do. It's not even supposed to be gold. You have to know what to say no to and what to say yes to. So just focus on wholesaling. Follow one course if you're successful. Focus. So that would be my advice for you. And change your mental aspect. Like what I did, I was reading a lot of self-help books, doing self-help seminars and things like that. So that pretty much contributed a lot towards my success.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I would say, especially right now, is to focus on learning for your specific market where the deals are. I think that above anything else is, if you can find deals consistently, you can always make money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just focusing on that specific niche, because in some markets, you know, one thing that somebody teaches is not going to work. Like in our market, for example, we just don't have very many pre-foreclosures right now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you focus everything on just that niche, you're going to get maybe one deal a year, as opposed to if you find that one strategy that is going to always produce consistent deals. Like in our market, vacant houses. Just getting out there and looking for vacant houses
mm-hmm.
always produces consistent deals. Whereas some markets, absentee owners, everybody's mailing to that. So it is going to be more competitive. It is going to be a little harder to find deals. Not saying you shouldn't do that at all. I definitely think that you should, but it's just finding that one niche that you can really dive in deeply into, and that's going to produce deals.
Great advice. Now, you two have a new podcast that's just launched. It's called Flipping Empire. Is that correct?
Yep,
that is correct.
Flipping Empire Podcast. And I'll get a link from these guys and put a link there. Want to tell everyone a little bit what they can expect from your podcast?
I mean, just real content of people who are doing deals today, and not 10 years ago and things like that. It's 100% content just to help you out, you know, get you started in your journey, because this real estate investing has given me and Chris so much. So it's kind of like our way of giving back up.
Excellent. So you all are doing some expert interviews. Are you doing any just like teaching podcasts?
Yeah, expert interviews, and some episodes are just based on teaching. But, yes, we're doing a lot of expert interviews of people mm-hmm. doing deals in today's market and different
okay.
markets across the country.
Great. And what's the best way for folks to get in touch with you? And you don't have to write this down. I'll get this information and put it in the blog post. So tell everybody how they can get in touch with you.
I'm going to say the best way is to go to FlippingEmpirePodcast.com and contact us.
Okay, that's easy. That's easy.
Absolutely.
Well, guys, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, I think people just love hearing stories. You know, everybody's story is a little bit different, and they love hearing from all the different people. So, once again, thanks so much. This is Sharon Bornholt, and I'll be back soon with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing.